Thank you, Professor Corval, and I want to thank you and Professor Changzhu for this kind invitation. It is a great honor for me to be here in this historic place. I thank all of you for coming. I know it's a holiday. If this lecture were happening in the United States on the eve of a holiday, there would be fewer people than this. So thank you. Thank you for coming. So this is the first of four lectures, and this one is entitled Why Hearts Attack. And I'll be talking about the problem of atherosclerosis and heart attacks. But before I begin, I want to pay homage to the person who set the standard for everything that Joe and I have done over the last 40 years. This quotation from Claude Bernard is the foundation for all biomedical, at least all metabolic research that has taken place ever since, nearly 150 years ago. And certainly in these four lectures, they will all be based on this principle of the fixité du milieu intérieur. I apologize for my French pronunciation. But clearly, the constancy of the internal environment at a time when the external world is changing constantly is indeed the secret of a free and independent life. And of course, Claude Bernard was talking about the whole organism, and it's certainly true. But now we have learned that it's not only the whole organism, but each cell in the body has a constant interior milieu. And there are many reactions that occur within each cell designed to maintain the constancy of the chemical composition of the cell. And it is that regulation, that process of maintaining the constancy at a time when the external world is changing, even at the cellular level, that is the basis for the work that you will hear in these four lectures. So let's begin with heart attacks. And this is an angiogram of human coronary arteries. These arteries supply blood to the heart muscle. When we are born, our arteries look like this. They're hollow tubes surrounded by a coat of muscle, and the center is entirely open so that blood can flow and carry oxygen to the heart muscle. But with time, the process of atherosclerosis takes place, and the cholesterol that is circulating around in the blood penetrates into the artery wall and forms these deposits which narrow the channel so that in this individual, the only channel for the blood to flow is that channel. And when that happens, eventually there's a blood clot that forms, blocking the circulation and causing the intense pain of a heart attack. Now, the cause of this process is clearly this lipoprotein. This is a cholesterol-carrying protein that is found in the blood. It's called low-density lipoprotein, or LDL. And it is the major cholesterol-carrying protein in human plasma. LDL contains a core of cholesterol esters, that is, cholesterol attached in ester linkage to long-chain fatty acids. There are about 1,500 molecules of cholesterol ester in each LDL particle, and it's surrounded by a polar coat that allows it to be soluble in water and a protein called ApoB, which directs the LDL to its sites of removal from the blood. Now, atherosclerosis begins when these LDL particles penetrate through the lining, through the endothelial lining of the blood vessels, and enter into the tissue of the muscle tissue of the wall itself. And the LDL becomes oxidized in this space, and that is a signal for its uptake of the LDL by macrophages. So scavenger cells or macrophages invade the wall. They take up all the LDL, but this process also causes the production of inflammatory cytokines, which sets up an inflammatory reaction. And with time, these cholesterol-loaded macrophages build up along with other inflammatory cells, and that's what creates this atherosclerotic plaque. Now, Joe Goldstein and I became interested in this, as the Professor Corval mentioned. We met in 1966 when we were both residents at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. And we, although we had different backgrounds, we both shared an interest, a deep interest in understanding human disease. And after our medical training, we decided that we would devote our lives to trying to understand a difficult human disease. And we were attracted to this problem of atherosclerosis because of this little girl. She was 6 years old. Dr. Goldstein and I performed our clinical training at the Massachusetts General Hospital, we both went to the National Institutes of Health outside of Washington, D.C. And there we had to take care of this little girl. She was 6 years of age. She was hospitalized because she was having repeated heart attacks. That same condition that I showed you that occurs in 60-year-old men, in this case, occurred in a 6-year-old child. She had so much damage to her heart from these heart attacks that her heart was actually failing. And the reason she had such severe disease was because the LDL level in her blood was 10 times above normal. So for a normal child, in the U.S. we use these crazy units, milligrams per deciliter. So for a normal child of her age, the LDL level should have been 100 milligrams per deciliter. But her LDL level was 1,000 milligrams per deciliter. And when the LDL level is that high, it begins to deposit not only in the arteries, but also in the skin. And what you see here, these bumps on the skin, are deposits of LDL. Here you see it in more detail. Every time that a young child falls and injures themselves and gets a bruise on their skin, the capillaries break and the blood leaks out into the tissue. And in a normal child, these scavenger cells will come in and digest all the constituents of the blood that have leaked out into the tissue and will carry them away. But when the LDL level is so high and the blood leaks out into the tissue, these scavenger cells come in, they ingest the LDL, but they accumulate so much cholesterol that they can't move away. And so they're trapped there and they form these bumps called xanthomas. And the same process that is occurring in her skin is also occurring in her coronary arteries. And it's very interesting that you don't need much trauma for this. If you look at, you see this ring of these deposits. This little girl grew up in a society where she wore a copper bracelet that was supposed to bring health. And simply from the rubbing of the copper bracelet, that was enough to damage the tissue when the LDL level is so high. So you don't need very much damage to the walls of the blood vessels in order for the LDL to penetrate, at least when the LDL level is so high. Now, Dr. Goldstein and I were assigned to take care of this child. We knew she had a genetic problem because she was 6, her brother was 8. He was hospitalized with exactly the same condition, also multiple heart attacks, and also this very high LDL level. And we decided, let me add one more thing. We thought about how we could treat this little child. And one thing we did was to remove all the cholesterol from the diet. So she and her brother were placed on a diet that was only vegetables for 6 months. They ate rice and fruits and vegetables, no cholesterol. And over that 6 month period, there was no reduction in her LDL level. So we knew in her case that it had nothing to do with cholesterol in the diet. And it was very frustrating at the time because there was nothing. This was in the late 1960s. Heart transplants were just beginning to be considered. Coronary bypass surgery wasn't being done yet. There was no such thing as stents to open these coronary arteries. It was very disturbing to see how sick these children were and to know that there was nothing we could do about it. So Dr. Goldstein and I decided that we would try to figure out what could be wrong with these children, why this cholesterol should be so high. And we both moved to Dallas and to try to set up a laboratory to solve this problem. We chose Dallas because Dr. Goldstein had been a medical student there, and he had promised his professor, Dr. Selden, that Professor Corvall mentioned, he had promised to come back, and along the way he picked me up. But then that was not hard, but the big problem was convincing my wife, Alice. Dallas was not an attractive place to live in 1971, but she agreed to move with me to Dallas. Of course, we've been there ever since and raised our family there and have enjoyed it. But in the beginning, it was a shock. So I give tremendous credit to Alice. And we set up a system to try to understand what kind of regulatory problem could cause the LDL level to rise so high. And we thought there was a problem with the feedback regulation of cholesterol biosynthesis. Now, I shouldn't have to explain feedback regulation here in Paris, where the whole system was established by Jacob and Monod. But nevertheless, what was known about cholesterol metabolism at that time was that there was an important enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase that is the rate controlling, that controls the rate of cholesterol production. And that enzyme was known to be under regulation. So if you, for example, if you take a rat and you put the rat on a zero cholesterol diet, the liver starts making lots of cholesterol. And it can produce all the cholesterol that the rat needs. The minute you start feeding the rat cholesterol, there's an end product feedback inhibition. The end product cholesterol turns off the enzyme HMG-CoA reductase, and the cholesterol production ceases. So we thought there might be a problem with the regulation of HMG-CoA reductase in these children. And to study that, we obtained skin biopsies and grew fibroblasts, tissue culture cells, and then we grew them in the presence of serum, which contains LDL. And we measured the HMG-CoA reductase activity. And when you do that with a normal cell growing in serum with LDL in it, the HMG-CoA reductase activity is very low. But then if you remove the LDL, over the next 24 hours, there's 50 to 100-fold increase in HMG-CoA reductase activity. And then when you add LDL back to the culture, there is this dramatic fall in the HMG-CoA reductase activity. Now, this may have been expected because we were removing LDL, which contains cholesterol, and then adding it back and delivering cholesterol somehow. But the shock was when we studied cells from one of these children with this genetic disease. her cells, even when they were grown in the presence of serum, they had almost a 100-fold increase in the HMG-CoA reductase activity. And there was no further increase when we removed LDL, and there was no decrease when LDL was added back. So the disease, I should mention, is called familial hypercholesterolemia, or FH. And the FH cells acted as though they really were indifferent to LDL. Now, this when we did this experiment back in 1973, we knew that we had found something very important, because these kinds of changes, these hundreds of fold changes that occur in a normal cell and not in this child with this genetic disease, you know, once you have that kind of a difference between a normal and a disease, if you can't figure it out, you should find another job. So we knew we had a challenge, but we knew that it could be done. And this slide then summarizes literally the next 10 years of work. And what we found was that normal cells, when grown in tissue culture, produced a protein on the surface that we call the LDL receptor. And the LDL receptor has a binding site that recognizes this LDL particle. And so when cells need cholesterol, they produce LDL receptors. The receptors bind the LDL, and then the receptors are clustered in regions of the membrane that are indented and have this fuzzy coat, which you can see in the electron microscope. Those are called coated pits. And it's crucial that the receptors be in these coated pits, because once the LDL binds, it is carried into the cell when the pit sinks below the surface and pinches off to form this little vesicle that carries the LDL to the lysosomes of the cell. There, the cholesterol esters are hydrolyzed, and the free cholesterol is liberated. And it can then be used by the cell to make new plasma membranes. It turns out that all of the cells in the body require cholesterol. It is a required component of the plasma membrane that surrounds the cell. And cells obtain cholesterol by producing LDL receptors and taking up LDL. But cells also have the ability to make their own cholesterol. So as long as LDL is available and supplying cholesterol, the cholesterol biosynthetic pathway is kept low. And that's why the HMG-CoA reductase activity was low when we grew the cells in serum that contained LDL. But when we removed the LDL, the cholesterol level within the cell fell, and the cell then turned on the HMG-CoA reductase in order to make cholesterol. Now, HMG-CoA reductase is just one enzyme in this pathway. It actually requires 30 enzymes to go from the basic building block, acetyl-CoA, to cholesterol, but reductase is the most regulated step. And then when we added LDL back and it entered the cell through the receptor, the feedback mechanism was invoked and the HMG-CoA reductase was again suppressed. Now, in the problem in the child cell in familial hypercholesterolemia was a problem in the very first step, that is, the LDL receptor. And these cells, the children's cells, could not make LDL receptors. They survived in tissue culture because they had very high levels of HMG-CoA reductase activity, and they made all the cholesterol they needed to grow. But they could not take up cholesterol from LDL. Now, in subsequent years, we were able to purify the LDL receptor, and then we were able to isolate the gene for the receptor, and this taught us about the structure. And we even have X-ray crystallographic structures of parts of the receptor. And the receptor has five domains. Here is the plasma membrane of the cell, and the bulk of the receptor projects outward into the external world, and only a small tail goes into the cytoplasm. This is the business end of the receptor. There are 7 ligand binding repeats, cysteine-rich repeats. Each of these red dots is a cysteine. And these are, this is the part of the receptor that recognizes LDL. This part of the receptor allows the receptor to recycle. So once the receptor binds LDL, enters the cell, it then releases the LDL to go to the lysosome, and the receptor returns to the surface to bind another molecule of LDL. And that's mediated by this EGF precursor homology region. This part has some O-linked sugars attached. This part, it spans the membrane. And this little cytoplasmic tail, only 50 amino acids, is very important because that is the part that directs the receptor to the coded pits. And we have cells from patients with mutations, point mutations in this tail that block the function of this tail so that the receptor can't go into coded pits. And if the receptor can't enter coded pits, then it can't carry LDL into the cell. Now, as I pointed out, the child that we started with is a homozygote. So the LDL receptor gene is on chromosome 19, on the short arm of chromosome 19. And in order to have this very severe condition, you have to have 2 mutant chromosomes, 2 mutations in the LDL receptor, in both copies. The copy inherited from the mother and the father has to be mutant. That's a rare situation, only 1 in 1,000,000 in the population. The cells can produce few or no receptors. They have a 6- to 10-fold increase in LDL and heart attacks in childhood. So this is not much of a population problem. It's a rare disease, the homozygous state. But it turns out that the heterozygous state is quite common for a genetic disease. These are people who have 1 copy of a mutant LDL receptor and 1 copy of a normal LDL receptor. Actually, 1 in 500 people in the population has this condition, a single mutation in the LDL receptor gene. They don't have a 6-fold increase in LDL. They have a 2-fold increase in LDL because their cells only make half the normal number of LDL receptors. And they have heart attacks beginning at age 35, not at age 6. And they account for 5% of all heart attacks under age 60 in the United States. So as a single gene disease, this familial hypercholesterolemia is fairly common. And the heterozygotes, I'll have more to say in a minute. Now, back in the early days, when we wanted to test our hypothesis in that the problem was due to a deficiency of LDL receptors, and to test that in people, we took plasma, isolated the LDL, and then attached a radioactive label to the LDL using iodine-125. And then we injected the radioactive LDL intravenously, and we took blood samples at different times afterwards to see how fast the LDL would be removed from the blood. Because the hypothesis was that if you have lots of LDL receptors, your cells will take up LDL and remove it very quickly. If you have a deficiency, it will be slower. And so when we did that, we found out that normal subjects metabolize their LDL relatively rapidly with a lifespan. The LDL particle lives for about 2.5 days in the circulation. FH homozygotes clear much more slowly, and FH heterozygotes, who have 1 normal gene and 1 mutant gene, are in between. And we could also corroborate this by taking lymphocytes from the blood of people and measuring their LDL receptors right out of the body. And again, normal subjects had high receptors, FH homozygotes had no receptors, and the heterozygotes were halfway in between. So this was genetic proof long before the gene was cloned that that this was due to a mutation in the LDL receptor. Of course, later when we cloned the gene, we were able to actually find the mutations in the DNA that caused this condition. Now, how does this receptor deficiency cause the elevation in LDL? And here I'll show you the what we've learned about the metabolism of LDL in the body. So LDL begins life in the liver, and it's secreted from the liver as a larger precursor called very low density lipoprotein, or VLDL. And VLDL contains triglyceride in addition to cholesterol in that core. And when the VLDL circulates through capillaries, the triglycerides are removed and deposited in adipose tissue and or burned in muscle. So this is the way the body delivers energy to for storage in adipose tissue or for combustion in muscle. But as the triglycerides are removed, the particle shrinks in size and it emerges from the capillaries as LDL. And then most LDL, 80% of it, is now taken back up into the liver through LDL receptors. And when there's a deficiency of LDL receptors, the liver makes VLDL normally, the VLDL is converted to LDL normally, but then there's a block in the removal process, so the LDL particle circulates for a longer time, and eventually it deposits in arteries and produces atherosclerosis. So we understand the genetic disease, but why do normal people have heart attacks? After all, heart attacks and strokes are the commonest cause of death in not only in the United States, but also in France. Despite the French paradox, which protects you a little bit, still the commonest cause of death in France, as in America, is the narrowing of these blood vessels, both to the heart and to the brain, due to these LDL deposits. And yet, but 499 out of 500 people have normal LDL receptors. So why should they have an LDL level that's high enough to put them at risk for a heart attack? Well, this is the way Time magazine said it, and now the bad news and this frowning piece of bacon is the bad news. And you all know the bad news. I don't have to tell you. It's because of the fat that we eat in the diet. And probably the strongest evidence for that came in the 1950s and 1960s. A man named Ansel Keys did what Joe and I think is the most important study, epidemiologic study in this field, which is called the 7-Country Study. And what Keyes and his colleagues did was they went to 7 different countries, different populations in 7 different countries, and they enrolled 10,000 people in each country between the ages of 50 and 60, all men. And they then followed them for 10 years. So this was a prospective study of 10,000 people, 70,000 people altogether. And they simply counted the coronary deaths. So this is a very hard endpoint. The coronary deaths per 1,000 people. And Keyes didn't measure LDL. He measured the total cholesterol. So we've taken the liberty of using a formula to convert total cholesterol to LDL cholesterol because about 2/3 of the cholesterol in plasma is in LDL. And what emerged from this study is this incredible relationship. So the highest incidence of heart attacks was in East Finland, where I'm told that people put about an inch of butter on their bread before they add the cheese. And they had the highest LDL levels and the highest heart attack. The U.S. was not far behind. And here at the low end is Japan, where the diet traditionally, actually, this was not even the general population. This was a fishing village in Japan where they basically ate only fish and rice and vegetables and had no meat and no dairy products. So, and this is an enormous difference. I mean, a tenfold range of incidence of heart attacks. Unfortunately, for some reason, I don't understand why, Keynes didn't include France. I think it was because he didn't want to know the bad answer. but he enjoyed his food too much. But the fact is, you see, Greece falls a little bit off this line, and there is this paradox of people around the Mediterranean, where they seem, people, if you live close to the Mediterranean, whether you're in southern France or in Greece, even Italy is a little below this line, you're somehow relatively protected, even at a each independently of the LDL level. We still don't understand that. There are many theories, and we could discuss it later, but we don't know the answer. So Keyes not only measured the LDL cholesterol or the cholesterol level, but he related it to the diet, and he showed that these are the people that are eating the high-fat diets, and these are the people that are eating the low-fat diets. You know, this was done in the 50s and 60s, but it didn't really penetrate into medicine at that time. Because really, people didn't understand how it was that a diet high in cholesterol would cause the LDL level to rise. We have been working on this in animals, and we think we understand the answer. And the answer comes back from this feedback regulatory system that I started out with. Remember what happens. When the cell accumulates cholesterol, there's a feedback, and it turns off or turns down the HMG-CoA reductase activity. What I didn't tell you was that this feedback mechanism also works on the LDL receptor. After all, when cells have too much cholesterol, they're trying to protect their milieu interior, and so they don't want to make any more cholesterol. They also don't want to take up any more cholesterol. So they not only repress the enzymes to make cholesterol, they also reduce the production of LDL receptors. So the production of LDL receptors is regulated. And when cholesterol builds up in cells, we've showed back in the 1970s that the LDL receptor becomes repressed or turned off. Now, how does this work in the body? When humans or animals are fed cholesterol acutely, there's no increase in LDL. Many years ago, when it was still legal in the United States to do this experiment, we took some medical students, and we fed them a breakfast that where they had a half a dozen eggs, a half a pound of bacon, and we gave them a milkshake, and we added more eggs to that. So they were getting an acute, enormous load of cholesterol. And then we measured the cholesterol every hour for the next 24 hours in their blood, and there was no increase at all after a meal. And the reason is because when cholesterol comes in through the intestine, it is immediately directed to the liver. It never becomes LDL. In this scheme of LDL metabolism, the intestine doesn't appear because the intestine sends its cholesterol to the liver by a different lipoprotein. And that lipoprotein is very active, that receptor is very active. So when you eat cholesterol, it never really gets into your circulation. It's rapidly taken up by the liver. But when you continue to eat cholesterol over a long period of time, especially when it's given together with saturated fats, saturated fatty acids, the cholesterol begins to accumulate within the liver. It builds up within the liver. And then that feedback regulation system comes into play, and the production of LDL receptors is reduced. Now, it's not reduced by 100%, or all of us would have cholesterol levels of 1,000 like these children. It's not even reduced by 50%, or we'd all look like FH heterozygotes. Probably more on the order of 10 to 20%. But that reduction is enough to lower the rate of clearance of LDL from the blood and allow LDL to build up in the circulation when high cholesterol diets are ingested. Now, this has caused us to reevaluate what a normal cholesterol level is. So when I went to medical school, this was the population distribution of cholesterol for a human being, as far as we knew. And the average LDL cholesterol concentration was 140 milligrams per deciliter. And we knew that heart attacks tended to occur, as shown here in yellow, when the cholesterol was above the median. But we didn't think it was really abnormal unless the LDL was above 160. Okay? Now, this was a very egocentric way of viewing the world. Because if we had measured the cholesterol in the human species as a whole, we would have gotten this result. It turns out that in the human species as a whole, the median cholesterol is about 80 milligrams. Median LDL cholesterol is 80 milligrams. And and it turns out the reason is because there are an awful lot of people in China and Japan where they eat very low cholesterol, traditionally, low cholesterol, low fat diets, at least before McDonald's arrived. And if you did just study the human species as a whole, this is the curve you would get. And all of us in Europe and North America would be in the upper 10th percentile for the human species as a whole. So it's not surprising that so many of us are having heart attacks, because all of us are above what we believe is the physiologic level for our species. Now, what evidence do we have from that? Well, first of all, you can measure the LDL level in other animal species. And of course, it's been measured in all of these species, including primates, baboons, and monkeys. It's always somewhere below 50 milligrams per deciliter. And even more important, in newborn humans, if you take blood from the umbilical cord from a newborn human, the level is 50 milligrams per deciliter, the LDL level. And it doesn't matter whether you're born in Shanghai or Chicago or in Paris or any place else. This is what the fetus, to go back to Claude Bernard, the fetus regulates its cholesterol level, and it keeps its LDL level at 50. This is at a time when the fetus has been developing and using a lot of cholesterol to make cells, make new membranes, and make new cells. This is the level at which the body maintains the LDL level. And if you are born and live in a society where you have a traditionally low cholesterol diet, the LDL level stays in this range, certainly below 100 milligrams per deciliter. And it doesn't rise, it only rises when you live in a Western society where you eat the diets that we customarily eat. And if one can relate this to the number of LDL receptors here schematically, the fetus and all these species have high levels of LDL. If you give LDL to a monkey, it is rapidly removed from the plasma because the monkey has very high LDL receptors. But we believe that with time, as we continue to ingest these high-fat diets, that LDL receptors are gradually reduced and our cholesterol levels rise to the point where we have heart attacks. Now, the it became possible to treat this condition back in the mid-1970s when a scientist in Japan named Akira Endo discovered inhibitors of this enzyme, HMG-CoA reductase. And I'm going to give a whole lecture on this, my next lecture. It's the story of these statin drugs. But I just want to briefly say that when Endo discovered, what he discovered was natural products, some things extracted from molds, from fungi, that were natural inhibitors of this enzyme. And the minute we saw his work, we realized that this might be a way to induce LDL receptors. Because even though the cholesterol in the diet is delivered to the liver, the cholesterol synthesis never stops completely. There's always some cholesterol synthesis going on. So we thought that if you could inhibit the cholesterol synthetic process, you would cause the liver cholesterol level to fall, and that would increase LDL receptors. And this simply shows the structure of these inhibitors, these statin drugs. Here's the reaction carried out by the HMG-CoA reductase enzyme. The product is mevalonic acid. And notice that it's a five-membered ring that can form this lactone ring. And it has this beta-hydroxyl group. Well, so does these natural products. Somehow, fungi have learned to make this structure with this lactone ring. And this is now a competitive inhibitor. It's actually a transition state inhibitor of the reductase reaction. And there are several of these that have now been approved. The first one discovered by Endo was compactin, but there are others that are being taken by many people. And these things are extremely potent. They're picomolar inhibitors of the HMG-CoA reductase enzyme. And so when they were finally tested in humans, there have been over 170,000 people that have participated in outcome studies. And in each case, these are people who are at high risk for heart attacks. They either had a previous heart attack or they're known to have narrowing of their coronary arteries by angiography. And these people are divided into two groups, and one group is put on a placebo, and the other group is given one of the statin drugs. And then they're followed for 5 years, and the number of heart attacks is counted. And this was the first such study. It was called the 4S study. It was done in Scandinavia with the first one of the first commercial statins, simvastatin. And this 4S study, placebos in this group had 25% of them had a heart attack in the next, within the next 5 years. But when they were treated with a statin, their LDL level came down and their heart attack rate came down. Now, the fascinating thing about this study is that the placebo people had LDL cholesterol levels of 190 milligrams. If you did that study today, anywhere in the world, you would be convicted of murder, because if you take somebody who is at a high risk for a heart attack and they have such a high LDL level of 190, and you give them a sugar pill for 5 years, that's murder. In fact, 25% of them had another heart attack in that time. Now you see the more recent studies, each one of these names refers to a study with a different statin drug. But all the more recent studies, the placebo groups had much lower LDL. If you had such a high LDL level, you couldn't go into the study. You had to be treated. But the placebo groups had lower levels. And still, in each case, when treated with a statin, the LDL came down and the heart attacks came down. And this, to me, is the most interesting one. It's called TNT, treating to new targets. They took half of the group and they put them on a low dose of atorvastatin, also known as Lipitor. and they got their LDL level down to 100, which we think is a very good level. But they took half of that group and increased the dose to 80, and the LDL fell further from 100 to 70, and there was also this highly significant further reduction in heart attacks. So this data begins to look like there is no lower limit here. The lower you are, the better. And look at the, again, the huge difference in heart attack rates from 25% down to 5%. That's, you know, a 80% reduction over that cholesterol LDL range. Because of that, in the United States, there is a federal commission that has recommended guidelines for what the LDL level should be in people who are at high risk. That means people who have either had a previous heart attack or have other risk factors like cigarette smoking, diabetes, or high blood pressure. These people, initially back in 1987, they said, if you have all these risk factors, you should try to get your LDL down to 130. Each time this group has met, they've lowered the threshold. So now, in the most recent one, they're recommending an LDL cholesterol of 70. So now, I should point out, like any other medicines, statins have side effects. Somewhere around 3% of people, especially older people, have muscle aches, and many people have to stop taking the drugs because of muscle aching, although it's very, very rare to have actual muscle damage. Only 1 in 20,000 people actually has physical damage to their muscle. But 3% of people will have severe muscle cramping. Cost used to be a problem, but now with generic statins available, cost is no longer an issue. Now, I want to finish by telling you about something new that's happened that may be even more powerful than statins. And it has to do with a protein called PCSK9. Don't ask me why it's called PCSK9. Just remember those initials. PCSK9 was discovered only about 5 or 6 years ago. It's a protein that's made in the liver. It's secreted into the plasma. It circulates in the blood, and it comes back to the liver and destroys LDL receptors. We don't know why the body makes that protein, but there's no question that it does. And normal people have PCSK9 circulating around in their blood, and so that further limits the number of LDL receptors that normal people make. And the reason we know that PCSK9 does decrease LDL receptors is because there are people who have mutations in PCSK9, and they are not destroying their receptors, so they have higher receptors, lower LDL levels, and fewer heart attacks. And these mutations occur quite frequently. So 1 in 30 Caucasians in the United States has a point mutation, a single amino acid substitution in PCSK9 that lowers its activity partially. And this mutation occurs in 1 in 30 Caucasians. It only reduces LDL by about 15% compared with everyone else, but heart attacks are reduced by nearly 50% compared to people without this mutation. Even more striking, 1 in 50 African Americans has a complete mutation, has a single copy of a PCSK9 gene that has no function whatsoever. Their LDL level is reduced by 30%, and their heart attack rates are reduced by 88%, 90%. This was really solid data from a prospective study that was done, and it's been repeated several times. These African Americans have all the other risk factors. They have just as much hypertension, they have cigarette smoking, they have diabetes, but even with those risk factors, if you have a PCSK9 mutation so that your body produces more LDL receptors, the LDL is reduced actually only by 30%, but just a 30% reduction is able to give a 90% reduction in heart attacks. This is much, much more powerful than statins. And it's illustrated here. If you have your LDL cholesterol lowered by 15%, and that lowering is caused by a statin, your coronary disease is reduced by 15%. But if that same 15% lowering is caused by a mutation in PCSK9, there's a 45% reduction. In other words, the same 15% lowering has a much bigger effect on heart disease when it comes from PCSK9 than when it comes from a statin. And the same thing, now that's even more, this 30% reduction is overwhelming. So how do we explain this? Well, here's the way Dr. Goldstein and I are beginning to think about this, the condition. We have to think about the LDL level as a summation over a lifetime. You know, in medicine, I don't know if you do this in France, but in the United States, when we used to admit somebody to the hospital who was a smoker, who smoked cigarettes, and let's say they had smoked one pack a day for 30 years, we would say they have 30 pack years of exposure to cigarettes, okay? If they smoked two packs a day for 30 years, they had 60 pack years of exposure. We are beginning to think that we need to think of LDL in the same way. So if you think of this line as being the threshold for having a heart attack, and a normal person in our society grows up and he accumulates LDL years until he reaches this threshold at age 60. Whereas somebody with PCSK9, since they start, we know from family studies that their LDL levels are lower from the time they're born. So they have lower LDL levels throughout their life, and it takes them longer to reach this threshold. Now, the problem with statins is that we might be able to change the slope here to be the same as PCSK9. The problem is that we don't start statins until too late. The people have already had all these LDL years of exposure before we start the statin treatment. But if we started statins earlier and changed this slope earlier, we might be able to prevent many more heart attacks. The problem is we don't know who's going to have a heart attack. We can't take somebody who has an LDL of 120 and say, you're going to have a heart attack. Therefore, even though you're only 50 years old and feeling perfectly well, you should start a statin drug to prevent the heart attack you're going to have 10 years from now. We don't know who. It's up to the cardiologist, frankly, to tell us by very sophisticated techniques of measuring the earliest signs of this atherosclerotic process. But if we could, I think if we could predict with any certainty who was destined to have a heart attack, and if we started LDL-lowering therapy before the disease has advanced, I believe that we would basically eliminate the disease. Now, I want to leave on a positive note. This line is for people who have PCSK9 mutations. But what if we actually block PCSK9 medically? Will that lower the LDL level? Well, several companies now, including Sanofi here in France, is working on approaches that will lower the PCSK9 level. The idea is if we could block PCSK9, LDL receptors would be more active and the LDL level would fall. And one of the approaches is to make a monoclonal antibody, to inject into people an antibody that blocks PCSK9 and blocks it so that the LDL receptors go up. And we're just beginning to see data coming out now from the early clinical trials, and I just want to show you one to show you how powerful this is. These were people who had familial hypercholesterolemia, the heterozygotes, and they were already on a statin, and the statin had lowered their medicine, their level to a certain degree. But then they were injected every 2 weeks with different doses of a monoclonal antibody directed against PCSK9. And look what happened to the LDL level. I mean, this is there was a further 70% reduction in the group that got the highest dose, 150 milligrams every 2 weeks. There was a further 70% reduction in the LDL level. Now, this approach requires an injection every 2 weeks, but for people who can't tolerate statins or for people who don't respond enough to statins, we think that in the future it will be possible to lower the LDL level to whatever level we decide is the appropriate one. And so far, only a few people have been tested so far, but so far we have not seen any of the muscle side effects in people treated with this antibody against PCSK9. Now, we don't know what causes the muscle side effects to begin with, but we have every reason to be optimistic that you won't see it with this monoclonal antibody whose only function is to stop this PCSK9 protein. So these drugs are now being tested both in Europe and in the United States, and it will still be maybe 3 or 4 more years before we have outcomes data, because the regulatory authorities won't accept simply that it's enough just to lower the LDL like this. They want to they want the companies to show that you actually get reduce heart attacks. And so it takes some time to accumulate that data, but we think that this approach holds a lot of promise. And certainly, at least 4 pharmaceutical companies are actively pursuing it. So I want to finish by going back to this child who started all of this. I'll tell you one quick story. Dr. Goldstein and I were at the NIH for 2 to 3 years, and then we left, and I had assumed that this child had died because she was so sick. Just 2 years ago, I gave a lecture at a big national meeting in Washington, and after showing this picture, a physician came up to the platform and said, you know, that little child, her last name is Cortinas, she's still alive. She's my patient now, and she's about 55 years old. The reason she's still alive is that after we had discovered the LDL receptor and realized that the problem was that these patients couldn't remove LDL from the blood, people devised a technique by which they take plasma from the body, run it over a column that removes the LDL, and then they infuse it back again, something like dialysis, except that they just remove the LDL. She has had that treatment for every week for the last 50 years, not quite 50, maybe 40 years. So every week for the last 40 years, she's had this treatment, which has kept her LDL down. Her heart was still strong enough to survive, and she not only survived, she had children. And her brother died before he was 10, but she survived by this sort of brute force removal of LDL from the blood. And it was a great feeling when we realized she had survived. So let me conclude at that point, again thanking Professor Corval, Professor Shanju, Professor Beaulieu, for being here. And I'm willing to answer any questions. Thank you.